ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Bhagavatam, 17th chapter, we're discussing Ilavritta Bharsha. First we have a handout, two handouts, your lucky day, and you'll want these and treasure them, because they're cool. I gave you a crude one I did, so Charuchandra like graphicked it up nicely. There's the worship in Ilavritta Bharsha. And here's your mental map of the territory there, in full color, with the little dimensions of the boundary mountains and the different varshas, and so on. Harmonium. Yeah, there's one sitting here in the corner. You're hiding away. This is an authorized user of our harmonium. Somebody's coming to grab a harmonium. The one upstairs. Okay, so you can see on the one where it's the same information but nicer done about how we go around for these prayers. Starting Ilavritta Bharsha, where does anybody remember the interesting social fact of Ilavritta Bharsha?
One male.
Yeah, the one male, and what happens to any guy who happens to venture into those precincts? He begets what's called Stri Baba. It's what it says here, the transformation into a female. We had told the story. I know, I said, yeah, this is the place to go. If you could get people there, you just better than Thailand, right? It's where they go to find out. Sex change operations. You just could somehow get there, fly through really fast. The only female pilots.
You stay a woman if you leave
the hotel? Yeah, apparently you do. I mean, it's a permanent job. Only this Sujumna got back and forth because of Vashista. Otherwise, that's what it is. Okay, so anyway, that story of his comes later. So we're talking about now these prayers to Lord Sankarsana. Here it is. Here it is. Let's chant this one again. We'll divide it up. Om Namo Bhagavate Mahapurushaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Mahapurushaya.
Sarvaguna Sakyayinaya.
Sarvaguna Sakyayinaya.
Arantaya.
Arantaya.
Avyaktaya.
Avyaktaya.
Namaha.
Namaha.
That's the prayer, the Upanishadic prayer. Huh?
This is chanted in Sankarsana. He's present there, right? There's some places where they're present. Vasudeva and Sankarsana.
Yeah, yeah, but here he's in a deity. He says that all of these are in deity form. So he's being worshipped here in deity form, but there are four places we said in the universe where he is personally present. That was from a long quotation from the Lalu Bhagavatamrita. I have here also. So we mentioned that he's the second person in the Chaturvyuha, and he is. the Lord of false ego. And in 424:35, he's there's prayers to the chapter of Yuha. He's called Shankarsana, which is translated as the master of integration. Now, Shankarsana means to draw together. So he's the master of integration. And he's Antika, the master of disintegration. So both things, the master of integration. Remember the force of gravity. Prabhupada describes Shankarsana Balaram is the force of gravity. So this integration, he holds the world together, basically. And also, he takes it apart at the end. So integration and disintegration. I'm going to go to 521.1 just a minute. I mentioned that this part of chapter 17 here is a kind of prelude to chapter 21, in which the wives of the Nagas, or I think maybe actually this is wrong, it's their daughters in chapter. It's not 21 either, it's 25, isn't it? Anyway, glorify Shankarshan as Ananta. Where is that? Let's see if I can find the closest pop up. Because I have a link to it. Bookmark. Yeah, I said 21 in that pop up, it's 25. The glories of the Lord Ananta. So here, here again, the glories of Lord Ananta is there. And we'll see some similarities here. So here he says, approximately 240,000 miles. That's, I think, 30,000 yojanas. 30,000 yojanas. Beneath the planet Pathala. That's the last of the subterranean heavenly planets. So you go down another 30,000 yojanas, and there is another incarnation, Ananta. See, so here he's both called Ananta and Shankarsana, because this is an expansion of Shankarsana. He is always in a transcendental position, but because he is worshipped by Lord Shiva, the deity of Tamogun, or darkness, he is sometimes called Tamasi. So this is the same information that we've already seen in this chapter. Lord Ananta is the predominating deity of the material mode of ignorance, as well as the false ego of all conditioned souls. We already said that Shankarsana is the deity of false ego. When a conditioned living being thinks, I am the enjoyer, and this world is meant to be enjoyed by me, this conception of life is dictated to him by Shankarsana.
Prabhupada is talking about Balaram. He said that usually, you know, the conditioned soul thinks I'm the enjoyer, and Sankarsana gives that feeling to the living being. He said, when you become devotional, when you pray to Balaram, then you're a servant, then Krishna and Balaram give you that consciousness that you're a servant.
In some ways, when you say integration and disintegration, here you look at the word for word, what he's responsible for. This abhimana. Abhiman means the it's a Bengali word, special Bengali word, but abhiman means your mentality or self-conception here, of aham, and this conception of aham is drasti dristayor sankarshanam, the drawing together of drasti, means the seer, and drishtayo, what is seen. The seer being spirit, and what is seen is matter. So what sankarshan, see the word is there, sankarshan, you can see it right here. My little thing is up there, yeah, sankarshan. The drawing together. That's the construction of the false ego. That puts the spirit soul in association with the material world. There's the link, this drawing together. And the same word is used, sankarshanam. So when he's the master of disintegration, he's also the liberator on that side. So that's a little more information out here, because I don't know if we'll get this far. I doubt it, not unless we skip a bunch of stuff. But again, Prabhupada says that because this forgetfulness is created by Shankarshan, he's sometimes called Tamasi. In the verse he says because he's worshipped by Lord Shiva, but it's a little just more than just that about who happens to worship him. He's the super soul of Lord Shiva, he says particularly, who must perform tamistic activities. Because of that, Sankarshan is sometimes called Tamasi.
Mm-hmm. Would you mind going back to please tell us, where are the four places of Vasudeva Sankarshan and Kriya? You said Sankarshan's at the top somewhere?
Yeah, it's mentioned in the Lagu Bhagavatamrita. I may have a... What happened now? How did I do this? I went here. Why can't I go back? There's no going back. It's weird. Right? I should be able to go on the back button. Let me go back to here. Okay. I think maybe I put it down here somewhere. Where did I put it? So here is his prayer. I looked at this. No?
That Sankarshan was just
there. Yeah, there's a Shankarshan, but I don't know if I stuck it in here. Yeah.
I think it was in 17:4. Because I have a note here, you know, saying that except in the spiritual world, the person on the bed cannot be directly worshipped in person. So we worship verses that I think that was connected to 17:4.
That's way back then. I don't think it's here. Maybe. Let's see. I think it's a 17:4. I had that big quote, and I don't know where I stuck it now. I don't think it's that far back. Oh, here it is. Yeah, here it is. Okay, it's in the text here. 17:14. Put a little one there in front of 4. This is what he says. That's where it was. Vasudev, Sankarshan, Padyumna, and Ariruddha are also present in the four directions of this material world. There is a Vaikuntha Loka covered with water in this material world, and on that planet is a place called Vedavati, where Vasudeva is located.
Is that shared outside Vishnu?
No. And as far as I can see from the Sanskrit, that's exactly what it says. Vanshanti Kamadi Ne Jalaviti Sta Vaikuntha Stitta Vedavati Pure. Yeah, that's what it says. There's a Vaikuntha Loka covered with water in this material world, and on that planet is a place called Vedavati, where Vasudeva is located. Another planet known as Vishnu Loka. Prabhupada has this in quotation marks, so he's translating. Is situated above such a loka. They're talking about in the material world. It's saying he's in four directions in the spiritual world and the material world also. there's a Sankarshan that is present. So that's Sankarshan. Similarly, in Dwarkapuri, Pradyumna is the predominator. And then on Svetadui, there's an ocean of milk. And in the midst of that ocean of milk is a place called Airavatipura, where Aniruddha lies on Ananta. So I can't sort this out with also the one that's at the bottom.
Is Svetadui
Anuruddha Loka? Sometimes it sounds like I don't think so. I think
that
different.
When we were going over through the Leela, the fourth canto,
yeah.
Some places it says that it was.
Yeah, in some places it's not. Right. So this is something we got to sort out, where exactly Vishnu was located. But here, this is from Lagu Bhagavatamrita, and there's some confusion exactly as to where he's located because of that question. Sound sometimes it says where he is. But here, I'm just presenting this here now. I haven't. We haven't sorted it out. That's right.
East, west, north, and south, it's not clear.
Yeah, and it's not clear what direction is which, right? They said in four directions. And here, it says in the four directions of this material world. Now, you know, according to what we have here, you know, north isn't the North Pole, it is Dhruvaloka. I don't know what the coordinate system is for the whole thing, but that's what we're learning is how much we don't know. That's typical everywhere in all fields. So now, after this Upanishadic prayer to Lord Shankarshan, there's this first of the verse prayers they offer, and this one's really beautiful. It's very poetic because it has lots of alliteration, huh? Bhaje bhajan ranya pada pankajam Bhavapaham Twa Bhavamishvaram. Isn't that nice? That's really beautiful. That's really nicely composed here. And so this is the first of these prayers. I am worshipping. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the reservoir of all opulences, Bhavasya Krishnasya Param Parayanam. The ultimate shelter of all opulences, and Krishnasya means, you know, everything altogether. And if you're secure lotus feet, that this Aranapada Pankajam. Pankaja is another word for lotus. It means mud born. Born from mud, Pankaja.
That's awesome. Because most punks are born.
Pankaja. Pada Pankaja. Lotus feet. Arana. That protect the devotees. Whom you satisfy by manifesting yourself in various forms. Bhavita Bhuta Bhavanam. And then, Bhakteshu Alam. To the devotees, Alam, he's, you know, complete, he's everything, beyond value, he says here. Yeah. And then, for the devotees, Baba Apaham, He stops the repetition of birth and death. And bhava bhavam, I mean, you look at bhava and bhavam in the dictionary, and there's so many meanings for all these words, you don't know where to go. So. And you can see here, this is typical. In one, in the word for word, who's the origin of the material creation, right? Because bhava is material creation, and bhavam means from which it comes. But also, bhava bhavam is... non-devotees, however, remain entangled in material existence by your will. Bhava apaham, he stops the bhava, the bhava, but for the others, bhava bhavam, he causes it to exist for the non-devotees. So here you see, you have to, when you look at the word for word, and you look at the running translation, you find two different translations for the same phrase. That's because different acharyas have also given these multiple meanings. So the text has I can't remember, there's a technical word for this in literature. It'll come to me. Something has polysemous. It has many meanings. Let's see if we can find this word. Just so you can... I spelled it wrong. Oh. Yep, that's it. This is the Oxford English Dictionary, OED, the venerable ultimate authoritative OED, which is many, many, many volumes, and which I finally had in a physical form where you had to use a magnifying glass because it was like... And now, ta-da, here it is. So, yeah, polysemos, they give you the Greek, having many meanings. And then they attest all the usages starting in 1884. What Dante himself, in his dedication to Cangrande, called the polysemos character of the poem. And so on. And then they quote the Latin. Anyway, so that's a nice word, polysemos, because Bhagavatam has that characteristic of sometimes many meanings, many senses. Okay. So here, this is this. So now there's a number of other prayers. This prayer has this, well, let me get the translation. Now this mentions from the beginning, we who have not conquered anger, the force of anger. Lord Shiva is saying, we who are having trouble conquering the force of anger. Therefore, when we look at material things, we cannot avoid feeling attraction or repulsion for them. So here, those of us who are in Maya, by all the activities of our mind, we are affected. And there is these two things, right? The dualities of liking and disliking. Something gratifies my senses, something doesn't gratify my senses. But the Supreme Lord is never affected in this way. His vision. There's a little concentration here on the idea of seeing and of vision. When we look at things, we see attraction, repulsion, when he looks at things, it's different. His drishti, his vision. I remember so now we're praying to him to give us the power to conquer the force of the senses which binds us. Remember, he's the binding force, and so here it says tam na manyeta, ka tam na manyeta up here. Kastam na manyeta with the Sunday. Who would not worship him? And this, in the translation of the next few verses, Prabhupada uses this as the refrain for the next couple of verses, because he puts it in the translation, you don't see it in the verses, that's because he's taking it from there. See how Prabhupada in purport talks about glancing over the material energy? Because this is talking about how you look. But he glances over the material energy, but he is not entangled in it because there's no attraction or repulsion on his side. This is the transcendental position. And then again, asatvishaha. Now, people whose vision is polluted by the influence of Maya. Now, when those same people look at the Supreme Lord, they think, and here's his description, his eyes appear like those of someone who indiscriminately drinks intoxicating beverages. This is the characteristic that we see in Lord Balaram, that his spiritual ecstasy is represented by his drinking Varuni, which is a honey beverage. You know, the ancient drink of the Anglo-Saxons was called mead, which was basically fermented honey. In Beowulf, in these old books, they're all drinking mead horns, cups made of horn. And so Varuni is represented like that. But Varuni is a consort. She is actually the daughter of Varuna, who supplies Lord Balaram with this ecstasy. So he's not actually intoxicated, but he's in a state of ecstasy. And so now, so he looks like that because his eyes are tamralochana. He has eyes that are reddish, like someone who's intoxicated. And such unintelligent people, they look at him like that, and because of their own contaminated vision, they see him as angry and fearful. This is an illusion. Then he mentions, when the wives of the serpent demon were agitated by the touch of the Lord's lotus feet.
But in the case of Ramana Devi and Kanta Bhagavata, it was described as the bottom was like a roller of his eyes, you know. And Ramana Devi, I think she's like very pure, right?
Mm-hmm.
She was mistaken him.
Yeah, well, she didn't come when he called. There is a transcendental anger. We see it in the Lord. Even in devotees, there's transcendental anger. It's not based on false ego. But I've seen Prabhupada literally shaking with anger. Literally shaking. I brought this professor to see him, and he was so angry, he was shaking. Then when the professor left, the Prabhupada, look at these nice newspaper articles about me and how you're reading it. The veins were standing out of his face, you know.
What was the professor talking about?
Huh? They came, his name was Vibhuti Yadav. This was in the Prabhupada Lilamrita, although they gave him a different name in there. And he was one of my professors in the religion department. He wanted to see Prabhupada. It's actually using nectar devotion in its course. Anyway, he came and he sat down. He had a couple of my colleagues, I mean, fellow graduate students with him too, and he sat down. And Prabhupada said to him, "So you're teaching, what are you teaching?" And he said, "Hinduism." And Prabhupada said, "And what is that Hinduism?" And he said, "I don't know." "You tell me what is Hinduism," he said to Prabhupada, in a kind of, "You tell me what is Hinduism." And that was the wrong thing to say, "I don't know," because Prabhupada stopped and then he said, "Now this is Swarup Damodar. He's also his PhD. Let us ask his opinion. He is teaching, but he says he doesn't know. What do you think of that?" On cue, Swarup Damodar says, "Cheater, Srila Prabhupada, he is a cheater." And then, "So he has called you a cheater." And then, you know, that's how it started out. You know, that's how it started out. So this professor got kind of, he lost his temper. But he didn't leave. And they had an ensuing conversation. I had a tape of it, but I lent it to somebody who wrecked it. And so it's no longer a record of this. But Prabhupada was so heavy with him. I mean, at one point, I can now only remember, I can't remember the whole line of things, but Prabhupada mentioned Mame Kam Sharanam Braja, because the question was, what is the Vedas? And then Yadav says, Veda means the first nine books of the Rig Veda, that's what they only that. So that was another thing. Scholars think of Vedic as different from Sanskrit. We usually think of the Vedic Sanskrit, but especially if you see this language in the first nine books of the Rig Veda. It has different rules and stuff like that. So he said that's Vedic. But then the Prabhupada was trying to talk about, you know, the process of knowledge. And so, And so sometime, one point, of course, Prabhupada mentioned Mame Kam Saranam Braja. And Yadav says, "What is the meaning?" And Prabhupada said, "You just surrender to me." And he said, and Yadav says, "What is the meaning of surrender? What is the meaning of surrender?" And Prabhupada said to his servant, his assistant says, "Give me a dictionary." And then Yadav was insulted. He says, "No." He says, "I want the Sanskrit etymological meaning of Sharanam Braja." He says, "I want the Sanskrit etymological meaning of Sharanam Braja." And Prabhupada looked at him and said, "We cannot waste our time like this. You do not want a spiritual master. You want a Sanskrit teacher." A moment like that. It was so heavy. And then finally, in some course of the thing, then in some course of thing, Yadav is insisting that Prabhupada teach him. "You teach me. I'm asking you, you teach me." And Prabhupada said, "I will teach you tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya." First of all, pranipatena, you must become shaven headed like these. Then I will teach you. And Yadav says, No, when I came in, I offered my pranams." And Prabhupada says, "Then my first instruction to you is to stop this cheating business." Right? So he admitted he was a cheater. He didn't know what he was teaching. He admitted he was a cheater. He said, but "I am an honest cheater." And Prabhupada didn't cut him one bit of slack. He says, "You say you are honest, but the judgment of a cheater cannot be accepted." So finally he left and everything, and I brought him there, and I didn't go out with him, you know. And these, one of these other graduate students is just giving these looks and everything. And I thought, my God, what's going to happen? I go back to the apartment, you know. And so then everybody's trying to calm Prabhupada down, because he really was shaking with rage, and his veins were standing out at this point, and showing him pictures of Gyanagri and everything like that. And some GBCs are giving me looks too. You know. So and the next morning I was going to drive Prabhupada out in his morning walk. This is in Philadelphia. It came in 75 for the Lafayette trip. And I couldn't sleep that night. And I, on my mind, I was composing my apology to him. You know. So as Prabhupada got in the car, and then there was, you know, the secretary and some GBCs and stuff in the back. Prabhupada sat, and they all just sit in the front seat. So I was driving off, and as I drove off, I said, Srila Prabhupada, I'm really sorry I brought that professor to see you. I didn't realize he was such a demon. I'm very, very sorry. And Prabhupada said, she's quiet for me. She says, no. He says, that's all right. She says, but then he said, at least he was chastised. Just like, you know. And then, you know, I mean, there was awkward times in the religion department with this professor there, because he was pretty hostile. And actually, he was going around to people in the Indian community complaining about how Prabhupada had treated them. And of the graduate students, one of them was delighted. He's got us, you know, dissertation director. He loved it, you know. And there's this other one, she kept saying to me, why didn't he answer his question? And the thing was, he was answering his question, but it was on a level that Yadav wasn't willing to accept. Prabhupada would basically say, you want to know what is Veda, what is knowledge? Okay, you surrender to the spiritual master. And Yadav was not surrendering. You know, it was this thing, the discussion was on this very existential level. And you know, Yadav was just, everybody looking for some answer on the mental platform. That wasn't what was going to happen. He did answer this question, and Yadav was not accepting it. So he was irritated for, you know, he was telling people, complaining about Prabhupada. But then later, some years later, you know, I was writing my doctoral dissertation. They didn't see me very often. I didn't have to go in the department every so often. But then I ran into Yadav, and he said to me, he was again worshiping Krishna. See, he is Pushtimar. He was a Balabha Sampradaya guy. And at the time he was seeing Prabhupada, he was all into some kind of weird Buddhistic kind of speculation. And he told me, he said, actually Prabhupada did the right thing with him, and it was very good. It took him a number of years, but he finally, you know, he understood that Prabhupada was good. And he actually became a Vaishnava again, you know, and started worshiping. Anyway, so Prabhupada was very angry, you know, but just simply on behalf of Krishna. It wasn't like his own false ego was anywhere. There was no false ego at all. So that's why, really, you know, when Prabhupada would get angry, it was just like, when it was over, it was over. It was just like, you know, not walking around fuming for 3 days later or anything like people do, you know, thinking of what you could have said and what you'll say next time, plotting revenge. None of that, you know. It serves its purpose, and then it goes away. So that's what you see in a devotee who's pure. You know, how much more with Krishna? And the other thing is, we see that the demons are always complaining about him because he's taking signs. They say, you see in the Bhagavatam, you're supposed to be impartial. Why are you siding with the Devadas? But in a way, you see, so it seems like he's partial, that he loves and he hates, but because he's absolute, the result of his anger or his hating is as beneficial as his loving, in the sense that everyone that he kills is liberated at once. They get the same result. Because they don't like Krishna, then they of course, he doesn't give them something they don't want, which is his association, but he gives them what they really do want, which is some kind of impersonal liberation. And sometimes they even, you know, like Putana, you know, she actually gets even better. So he seems like very angry. Balaram seems really angry. But he's just like the earthy aspect of Krishna. He's down to earth. He carries the plow. You see this in the chapter 25. Since we may not, probably won't get there. Lord Ananta is down there, and it describes the universes, or actually, Prabhupada says here in the translation, this great universe is sitting on his hoods, or Shakti Mandalam. I mean, it all sounds like. You could also read that as Bhumandala, because you know, he's holding up. I mean, I'll show you something I have here that's really neat to look at for a minute, which is excuse me while I look around here. Where is it? I think it's not here. It's here. It's this one. You see that? This is a kind of side view of the universe. It's a Bhagavatam Puranic manuscript. This is 56. I'll make it a little bigger so you can see. These are the shells out here, these little things. And then, you see, here's Bhumandala with Brahma atop. This little stupid thing keeps popping up. I don't know why it has to do this. But this is my back here. Sometimes when these programs are being helpful, they're most unhelpful. Having little pop-ups when you don't want them. Yeah. So you see. There's this. Here's Ananta. This is Bhumandala, and here it seems to be the different lower heavenly planets. And see here's Vishnu. Now this is the one that looks like it's Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, because the lotus is growing up through the middle with Brahma on it. But see, here's Ananta. See how his heads are holding up? And here the elephants, two of them. So Vishnu Chakravarti says actually that Bhumandala does not actually touch. There's a gap of, I don't know, 16,000 yojanas or something between the edge of Bhumandala and the earth. And that Anantadeva is holding it up, and that the elephants keep it level. When it tilts, they get a little sway back and forth or something.
How do you do that?
Huh?
How do you do that?
Four.
So they say, how
big are they? I would imagine they're pretty big. It doesn't say. We have their names, however. their names are given in chapter 20. Anyway, this is an old one, an old thing here.
Where is this from?
You know, I don't think I have a. I don't know if it says in the.
Is it possible to manage that we should read?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't have the record of where it came from. Somebody picked off the internet. It may have been me, it may have been somebody else. I don't even remember. But there's stuff like this around, you know, an old manuscript. We're collecting them. And so this is from some Purana. I don't know what it says. Here's a bunch of, snakes in the middle. When you zoom in, you kind of, it becomes fuzzier, harder to read. It's also hard to see in projection. Anyway, that's another thing. So he's holding up. That's all. So these are other pictures. Okay. Here we go back to the text. Oh yeah. So I want to go down here. I should have put a link, because I think when you do this, you can't go back by the back button. Yeah, it doesn't do that. Oh, no. So he's there, he has them on their heads. At the time of devastation, Lord Anantadeva desires to destroy the entire creation. He becomes slightly angry. Then from between his two eyebrows appears three-headed Rudra carrying a trident. This Rudra, who is known as Sankarsana, you see the long A in the first, means coming from Sankarsana, Sankarsana. Just like Vasudeva means coming from Vasudeva, is the embodiment of the 11 Rudras, or incarnations of Lord Shiva. He appears to devastate the entire creation. So that angry mood is devastating. Somewhere else it says, because he becomes angry because the conditioned souls, it's time to devastate the creation, and the conditioned souls who were here and had every opportunity to get out didn't use it. The pink transparent toenails on the Lord's lotus feet are exactly like valuable gems polished to a mirror finish. I love this part. When the unalloyed devotees and the leaders of the snakes... See, because he's down there with the Nagas, and he is a Naga too. Shesha Naga, sometimes he's called, right? So here's the Ahipati. This is the plural of Pati, Ahipati. The Ahi is a snake. The leaders of the snakes, along with the Satvata Rishabhada. Satvata means a devotee. Also the who have unalloyed devotion, they become very joyful upon seeing their own beautiful faces reflected in his toenails. That must be quite an experience. Their cheeks are decorated with glittering earrings, and the beauty of their faces is extremely pleasing to see. Prabhupada says, when you decorate the deity, you become decorated. When you make Krishna more beautiful, you become more beautiful. And then, Lord Ananda's arms are attractively long, beautifully decorated with bangles, and completely spiritual. They are white, so they appear like silver columns. When the beautiful princesses of the serpent kings, see here they are, the princesses of the serpent kings. Who are these people, huh? Hoping for the Lord's auspicious blessing, smear his arms with agaru pulp, sandalwood pulp, and kumkum. The touch of his limbs awakens lusty desires within them. Understanding their minds, the Lord looks at the princesses with a merciful smile, and they become bashful, realizing that he knows their desires. Then they smile beautifully and look upon the Lord's lotus face, which is beautified by reddish eyes rolling slightly from intoxication and delighted by love for his devotees. So, Mada, due to intoxication with kindness, you see there in the word for word, right? Intoxication with kindness. Yeah, so the daughters of the serpent kings, it mentions here. And the, where are they? Yeah, Naga, Raja, Kumaris. Yeah, they're Kumaris, the unmarried. Here they're mentioned as the unmarried princes, the unmarried daughters of the Nagaraj, the serpent kings. Well, as I understand, Anantashesh and all the Nagas seem to have two forms, a snake form and a human-like form, mm-hmm. and they seem to be able to go back and forth. Well, when you see them praying, right, they usually show them sort of these women coming out of the mouth of snakes, or they're half snake, half women, or something like that. And like something like mermaids or something. But as far as I can see, the real thing is they simply can have either form. And certainly Anantashesha, he has this, he describes him as a human form. But he's also, you know, she seems to have both forms at once. So they relate to him like he's one of their own kind. But then they're smearing this ointment on his white arms like marble columns, huh? And Makara Dwaja, Cupid is in their heart. And so on. Yeah. So here says Nagaraj Kumaris, the virgin daughters of the serpent kings. And here's an interesting problem. When males and females touch each other's bodies, their lusty desires naturally awaken. It appears from this verse that there are similar sensations in spiritual bodies. Now he says both Lord Ananta and the women giving him pleasure had spiritual bodies. So here they are down at the bottom of the universe. I'm really puzzled by this. Another thing, you know, they because they're associating with the Lord and touching him, yeah, they have to have spiritual bodies. That follows. So my question is, what's going on? You know, somehow or other he's appeared among the Nagas and as a Naga. And somehow or other, within there's kind of a little spiritual world or something like that. So they have spiritual body. Thus, all sensations originally exist in the spiritual body. Janma yasya yataha. And here's something that Prabhupada actually mentions in the very beginning of Bhagavatam. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has commented in this connection that the word adi, as Janma Adi means Adi Ras, the original lusty feeling, which is born from the Supreme. However, spiritual lust and material lust are as completely different as gold and iron. Only one who is very highly elevated in spiritual realization can understand the lusty feelings exchanged between Radha and Krishna, between Krishna and the damsels of Braj. Anyway, so Prabhupada talks about this but anyway, this is just like really interesting. Lord Shankarshan is the ocean of unlimited spiritual qualities, Anantaguna Arnava, and thus he is known as Anantadev. He's none different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is Adidev Deva. For the welfare of all living entities in the material world, he resides in his abode, restraining his anger and intolerance. This Amarsha and Rosha, the forces. Oh yeah, so here's why he says what he's angry about. That's why I told you, yeah. After the creation, the creationists give the conditioned souls another chance to go back home. They don't take advantage of it. After creation, they again exercise their whole propensity for lording over the material world. These activities of the conditioned soul's anger, Anantadev, and he desires to destroy the whole material world. So only at certain times is he let loose at the appropriate time. Then it describes the demigods, the demons, the Urugas, serpentine demigods. There's another, I'm not sure who the Urugas are. That's why I want this Quranic encyclopedia now, at least beginning. The Siddhas, the Gandharvas, the Vidyadharas, and many highly elevated sages constantly offer prayers to the Lord. Because he is intoxicated, the Lord looks bewildered, and his eyes appearing like flowers in full bloom move to and fro. He pleases his personal associates, the heads of the demigods, by the sweet vibrations emanating from his mouth. Now listen to how he, dressed in bluish garments, like Lord Balaram, and wearing a single earring, he holds a plow on his back with his two beautiful and well-constructed hands. Appearing as white as the heavenly King Indra, he wears a golden belt around his waist and a Vajayanti garland of ever-fresh tulsi blossoms around his neck. Bees, intoxicated by the honey-like fragrance of the tulsi flowers, hum very sweetly around the garland, which thus becomes more and more beautiful. In this way, the Lord enjoys his very magnanimous pastimes, Udara Lila, it says here, up here. So that's his description, huh? And the bees are there, the sweet singing. It tells elsewhere that these bees, if you listen to what they're humming is, it's the sound of Vedic hymns. If any persons who are very serious about being liberated from the material, from material life, hear the glories of Anantadev from the mouth of a spiritual master in the chain of the succession, this is a problem. And if they always meditate on Shankarshan, the Lord enters the core of their hearts, vanquishing all the dirty contamination of the. So notice how Shankarshan is mentioned here. You're down talking about Ananta. And again, he's the original spiritual master. So he enters the core of their hearts, vanquishes the dirty contamination of the modes of material nature, cuts to pieces the hard knot within the heart, which actually he ties. We already learned. Which had been tied tightly since time immemorial by the desire to dominate material nature through fruitive activities. Narada Muni, the son of Lord Brahma, always glorifies Ananta in his father's assembly. Thus he sings blissful verses of his own composition, accompanied by his stringed instrument, or some say a celestial singer, known as Tumburu. And then Prabhupada tells us that these are not imaginary descriptions. They're transcendently blissful and full of knowledge. And so he talks about Narada Muni who's singing these songs. In our Sampradaya, therefore all devotees in the Gaudiya Sampradaya accept the activities of Lord Ananta relating in the Srimad Bhagavatam as authentic, unless they are benefited by going back home, back to Godhead. And then we have the songs of Narada Muni here. So there's, anyway, we skipped ahead that far just to let you know. Yeah, he probably quotes big sections of glories of Ananta from the Chaitanya Bhagavad. We'll go back to where we are. That's just like going ahead a little bit. Glory to Lord Ananta. Here we are. So here we're Lord Shiva's prayers. We're talking about his eyes appearing intoxicated. Here it mentions the wives of the serpent demon.
Is this exact chapter actually going forward to the 25th chapter? But when the unmarried princess was touching, so it's like the conjugal arrest.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. That's what's happening. Even Lord Balaram, you know, is explained very carefully to Tanya Bhagavad. He has his own gopis, and so yeah, this is what they're talking about. Yeah, that's right. But then they have spiritual bodies. Yeah. What is it? Yes, conjugal love. And here, what Prabhupada translates as wives of the serpent demon, it just says Nagavadu in the plural. Vadu means, yeah, a bride or a young wife. Anyway, as Prabhupada says, all women belong to Krishna.
This is where he shows the picture.
Huh?
It says must have seen and then he shows the picture.
Yeah. All the great sages accept the Lord as the source of creation, maintenance, and destruction, although he has nothing to do with these activities. So this is here is just we're on a very basic a kind of philosophical level of how. Now here it says Bhumandala. You see that? What here's glossed as the universe, which was a little. He does have universes on his head too, somehow or other. But also here, in that picture, it's Bhumandala that's on the universe. Therefore, what person desiring perfection will not worship the Lord? You see how powerful he is. He holds it up. He has Bhumandala on his head. And the hundreds and thousands of words of the head. So though he's doing these things, he's at the same time without any... he actually has nothing to do with these activities. I mean, he's all these three... He's unentangled. And then also here's Adi Lila. There's many verses about Ananta Dev. And these two verses come together. So now Lord Shiva brings it down to himself. From that Supreme Personality of Godhead appears Lord Brahma, whose body is made from the total material energy. The reservoir of intelligence predominated by the passionate mode of material nature. That's a very interesting way to put it, that Brahma's body is made out of Mahatattva. Mahan, which is Vijnana. So here really, he's kind of rehearsing the sarga. From Lord Brahma, I myself am born as a representation of false ego, known as Rudra. By my own power, I create all the other demigods, the five elements and the senses. Therefore, I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is greater than any of us, and those who control are situated all the demigods, material elements and senses, and even Lord Brahma. I myself, like birds bound by a rope. The word for bird is vulture. It's in the word for word. He mentions. Because you think of a rope, a bird by rope, but it's a big bird, so it's a vulture. The Prabhupada says in the purport, sometimes people capture vultures and keep them with a rope. Only by the Lord's grace can we maintain and dilate the material world. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances to the Supreme Being. The Prophet says, a summary of creation is given in the verse. If you look at the Sanskrit, the very technical terms that you find early in the Bhagavatam, for the Karika and all these other things are in there. We don't have time to get into that. Lord Rama is born from the Mahatapa, he says it here. Exactly as the owner of a bird controls it by binding it with a rope, the personality Godhead controls the most important demigods and prophecies. Sometimes vultures are controlled in this way. I don't know why anybody, or anyway. Of course, the vultures are disappearing from India because of this antibiotics they put in the cows. You know that they're dying off. Big crisis, ecological crisis. The illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead binds all of us conditioned souls to the material world. Therefore, without being favored by Him, persons cannot understand how to get out of that illusory energy. So He's the one that puts together Vrastya Dristayo Sankarshana. So you want to get loose? The same person who holds you, do it, puts you together, has to loosen it. When will he do it? When you ask him. And mean it. Some people ask, but they're not eager to do it.
What was it called?
This was St. Augustine had this famous statement when he was young and foolish. He prayed to the Lord, Lord, give me, he was talking about conscience, the celibacy, you know, brahmacharya. Lord, give me conscience, but not just yet. He said he prayed like that. And really, that's what a lot of times, you know, please, yeah, I want to become your devotee. I want to be pure and free from material desires, but in 10 years. Or I want to be free from material desires, but not this one. Leave this one alone, destroy the others. You know? Then what happens? You know? So really for him to do it, you really have to sincerely say, but then it can be done. So if he doesn't do it, it's because we should look to how what we're really asking for. So here's a long purport where Prabhupada is talking about the scientists not understanding the union of matter and spirit in the material world. And so here's a striking phrase by Prabhupada. The living entity is entangled in fruitive activities which are executed by the illusory energy Maya. He's exactly like a computer handled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's those are the prayers, the resonances of Jambudvipa. So you can see that these prayers focus on the very basic powers of the Lord as both the creator and the destroyer, and also the binder together of the living entities of the material world and the releaser. And this is coming from Lord Shiva, you know, who's in quite a position to know about these things, since he's a big facilitator of this. But although he's in charge of the mode of ignorance, there is a sense, of course, in which everyone in the material world is ignorant. So therefore, he is in charge, kind of sub-ruler of the whole creation. Well, any questions about this so far? Yes. Excuse me, I have a whole long and I can't hear you. You found a mistake?
Just a small thing.
Not really. Yeah.
It says prayers begin here, meaning here. And the arrow takes you over to indicate the order. But because the arrow is right next to the word here, it means prayers begin here.
It makes it look like I'm saying that actually it's here.
So. Oh, I see. That's really pedantic. Because we always have people like that. You know? As we do to people who are real fault finders, we make them editors. Give them a useful outlet for their profession. Yes.
One is universe and woman. Woman means inside the woman is the woman. So you said that the Brahmana is the woman.
The Brahmana means the whole egg. The universal egg with its shell as the Brahmana. And then Bhumandala is floating in the middle, or being held up in the middle of this. Halfway, I think. Just exactly in the middle. So that... No, not in the middle of the universe, because the Garbhodak Ocean goes halfway. So the Garbhodak Ocean fills up the Brahmanda halfway. And then in the middle of the rest of the space is Bhumandala. I think those are the distances of relatives. And then above up there, up to Swarga, above Swarga, and then Maharoga, Tapaloka, Satchaloka, Janaloka, Satchaloka. And then below is the different Vila Swargas. And then below that, Pichiloka. The hellish planets, Naraka, and down. And then just above the water, there's an illustration in the Bhagavatam. Huh? Does he have a Bhagavatam? There's a picture. There's a chart. I have my Bhagavatam here. Yeah, there you see. Look.
Not this one. There's... And this part here, from right here, this little section is blown up. So this gives all the distances. Because this is, you know, this right here is the Dhruva Loka, and the Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Satchaloka. See, there's plenty of room between Satchaloka and that little shell. Another Vishnu planet.
And
then here, this right, this little line, this is Bhumandala, showing it goes, of course, all the way across.
Yeah.
And then down here is Atala, Satala, Vitala, so on.
So that's the end. This is Noah.
Yeah, turn it off. Let me get this smoother. Huh?
Proportion.
I think there's an illustration here also.
So, this is done. This right here is a blow of this little section down there. And so you can see where it's going to be.
I saw another picture somewhere. I thought it was here.
Is that coming lower than the other?
Lower than?
It says Hong Kong.
See this little square here? And all this little
stuff? This square
and this stuff here. So Bhumandala is all the way to the bottom, but not all the way, but almost to the bottom.
Well, how far does Bhumandala extend from the start?
It extends almost to the edge of the universe on all sides around.
Pretty close to the
sun. Over here, Bhumandala is what's part of the light of the sun and the moon. So it's not Dubaloka. That's not part of Bhumandala. Dubaharloka.
No. Planetary system. Yeah. But the Loka mountains go up as far as Swarga. They enclose Swarga.
That's Divya Swarga. No.
Yeah, Divya Swarga. They do. That's right. It goes up as far, or it says as far as Dhruvaloka.
Oh, okay. So as far as
Dhruvaloka,
that's the extent of...
Yeah, that's within Loka Mountain.
Okay, so that's...
So the sunlight and everything and whatever else is confined within this walls or... Some people describe them as the petals of a lotus that curve up, you know, go up like this. The Loka Mountains.
So the other planets, like Maharloka, Dhanaloka, their stuff
you follow,
so what? Does the sunlight doesn't reach?
Well, they could go up, but I don't know how those planets work. There's not much description of them. It's just, you know, Brihat Bhagavatam Rita, now you have a lot of description of how they work, but how they're illuminated, I'm not sure. They may be self-effulgent, or maybe somehow the sunshine goes up. I don't know. But they're above, if they're above, but they're toward the middle, they're within the, you know. I mean, think of a flashlight with a guard around it so that it focuses the beam up, so they could go up that far. But I think that with those distances, you're pretty...
Isn't this when the sun travels,
it
actually travels around the outer edge of that area?
Huh? No, the sun is not in the outer edge. The sun is on in the middle of an island that's I forgot the name of it. This part I have to learn a little better so I remember all the names, but just a second, I'll get it for you.
Do you have a CD in there?
Yeah, we could put a CD in there and you can see. That's a good idea. The CD is in there, right? We have light yet? No, we don't.
I can put it back on.
We have it on, I can do that. You can see it yourself. Uh-huh. Pushkara Dweep is the one that does, that has the Manasotra mountain range going in the middle of it. And so when you go, when you finally reach the end, you have a radius that takes you out all the way to the edge of the universe, almost. He gives radiuses, like Jamadweep. The radius of Jamadweep is 50, that's in thousands of yojanas. That's 50,000 yojanas. So if you take the whole radius going all the way out, it's 250,000 yojanas of Aloka Varsha, because it's as much as everything else. So then you have 500,000 yojanas, which is the radius of the universe, because it's half the diameter. Do you have power now? Oh, okay. Let me see what I have.
To go to here, right, and I have to go to
my computer.
My computer, thank you. There we go. Here it is. There's a lot of heat up here. It's kind of little, unfortunately, but it's there. Okay. So this shows Bhumandala here. See, it goes almost out to the edge, right? It doesn't hit the edge.
Bhumandala is just the orange part, or is it the whole light?
No. This is Bhumandala on several different scales, right? As you can see. Somehow or other I can't get that text in the way. This something's wrong with this right now. I should probably take it out and put it back in again. I guess as usual. So here's close up Jamadweep, right, with the salt ocean. And then see how big the salt ocean is. The same, this is 100,000 yojanas, and this is 100,000 yojanas. Then Plakshadweep is 200,000 yojanas, and they double, they keep doubling like that, right? Mm-hmm. And he gives a table. You like tables. Right here. The radius, radii and thousands of yojanas. The oceans, the thickness of each of these islands with the ocean around it. There's the Jambu Deep and there's the salt water ocean, the Plaksha Deep, and then the Ikshura Rasa ocean. The ocean of Ikshura is the ocean of liquor, the ocean of ghee, the ocean of milk, the ocean of yogurt. Ikshu is sugar cane juice. And then so you get out, see, so island, ocean, you see how the size, thickness increases? 200,000, 200,000, 400,000, 800,000, Kamsha Dreep, 1600, island, ocean, and then here, Manasodara Mountain is in, divides Pushkar Dweep into two. All these Varsha, all these ring islands, annular islands, are divided into seven Varshas. Except for Pushkar Dweep, which is divided into two, one on one side of the mountain range and one the other. Manasodara Mountain is the mountain the sun goes around. Then what happens is after Pushkar Dweep, there's Swaduka Ocean, that's the freshwater ocean, and there's this region called Loka, this inhabited region, which is really big. And then after that is this further region and mountain is the one that's called Kanchana Bhumi. There's Loka and Kanchana Bhumi, sort of like Loka, but it's not inhabited because it's you can't see anything. It's just golden surface. And then there's the mountain, and then after the mountain there's another 125,000 yojanas.
I was giving two figures there, one is the radius and another is thickness.
Yeah, the thickness of the individual, the radius of the individual, and the radius, this is accumulates, right? Yeah. Yeah. He keeps adding these up, right?
Yeah. So
the last number is the final radius. The thickness of each individual doesn't, it's hard to say that since the islands are rings, what's the radius? So he just does the thickness of that. Islands and the oceans.
You mean the other dimensions? So, top to bottom.
Huh?
He doesn't mean top to bottom.
No, no. He means thickness from width, you know.
Width. Oh, okay.
But not radius, because the radius. That's this chart. He says there are two circular mountains. One first called Manasotara, which cuts the island of Pushkar Dweep in half, and the second, called Loka Loka, is the outer boundary of the annular means ring shape, region called Kanchani Bhumi, the golden land, that's also not inhabited. Right? That's the table. Now here you see what he calls the numbered features. So here you take out the Manasotara Mountain. Here he's drawing the scale. So This is here is Sapta Dvipa. These are the different dvipas. You can start seeing But anyway, here's Sapta Dvipa in here, right? This is drawn to scale. Here's all of the seven islands, 1 through 15. This is the last one. This is the Manasota Pushkar Dweep. And then there's this 14 is the Sweetwater Open Ocean. This is Loka Varsha. Then here's Kanchana Bhumi. This golden region that's empty. Then here's the mountain range, this Loka mountain, this circle here. And then here is this Aloka Varsha, which goes out to the radius, to the close to the edge of Bhu Ramanda. Okay, you got the picture?
So Ramanda is just a little over 250,000.
Yes, it's 250,000 yojanas. Bhu Mandala is a little short of that. There's a gap. I'll have to find where it is. It's in my notes. Because there's a long thing, a long passage from Vishnu Chakravarti that Prabhupada puts in the Bhagavatam, but doesn't translate it. But that's where Vishnu Chakravarti adds everything up and determines that there's a short gap. I think I already read that here. A small gap, I can't remember, 15 or 16,000 yojanas between the end of Bhu Mandala and the actual shell of the universe. And he says, because Bhu Mandala is not stuck to the side of the universe because it falls down and is rescued by Varaha. So, no, that's from the edge, the outer edge. It falls down into the Garbhodak Ocean.
Oh,
you know, and I assume that where it is, the Garbha Ocean, which is halfway, is wider.
I was just going to say, so it's not an oval,
it's
a sphere.
It is a sphere.
If you go down, the sphere gets smaller.
No, but halfway, the ocean is halfway, and then you're above the ocean, it is smaller. Because you're past the point where it starts to decrease.
A little bit above the ocean.
Well, it's a little bit above the ocean looking at the whole thing. If you're close by, it's quite a distance down there. It's quite a distance. So it falls down there. So according to this, Varaha picks up the whole of Bhu Mandala. And then Vishnu Chakravarti also says that it's being held up by Ananta, and because it's not anchored, it needs stability, and therefore the elephants, these four Gajapatis, on the top of Loka Loka Mountain, balance the whole thing.
And they must live as long as the life of Brahma.
The elephants are on top of
Brahma. I don't know that they live the life of Brahma. There's a new bunch of elephants that come in and the other golden tires. It's like they change every manu. There's a whole administration. Maybe the elephants change too. I don't know.
Yeah.
So they're on the local mountain?
Yeah.
So it's being pivoted then and they're balancing like
Yeah, they're like they're that. Actually in the four directions. They're like, well, yeah, they're big heavy elephants. This is what the Bhagavatam says. We will try to find more information about those elephants, how they live, who takes care of them.
I was picturing them underneath all the elephants.
No, according to this, I mean, see, some people say, you know, that elephants hold up, but according to Bhagavatam, the elephants don't hold up. They're being held up by
elephants.
Yeah.
So when there's partial annihilation, how far are we going?
It goes, well, there's several annihilations.
This is what the day and the end of the ninth brahma.
The night of Brahma Satyaloka is not annihilated. Maybe the Mahaloka, Tapaloka, Janaloka. I don't remember now. Sometimes there's a partial annihilation at the end of every Manu, but that seems to go only up through Bhumandala. But then there's also, in Brahma's night, there's an annihilation that belief goes all the way up to Satyaloka. No, I'm not sure about that. No, the heavenly planets goes up to the heavenly planets anyway. And then at the end, it of course goes all the way. There it describes that, you know, people on Mahaloka and Janaloka are carried up by spaceships. So I think that during Brahma's night, it's not a total. I don't know that the people in Prabhupada's presence, they describe them as, oh, Bhumanda's like a lotus, these are the outer petals. Mm-hmm. And Prabhupada didn't object, but he didn't call them like lotuses. So I don't know that they curve.
Well, if they come real close to
They start. No, they're not that close to the edge. I mean, look at here. Between them and there's still more territory that's uninhabited. Here's the radius of the Brahmanda close by here. Here's the mountain. So there's a big chunk of land out here, about the same distance as the rest of it.
Then the Loka mountains. I could start and end where on that day.
Right here. See where it says Loka Mountains, yeah. Pointing right here?
This starts is the, there. Where's the outer...
And they go up.
No, but in this place,
that's the peak, right?
This side?
On this side, I think it's just, that's just the peak.
You're looking down. Here, this is from above, looking down.
But there's a radius of the Loka Mountains.
Yeah, there is a radius of the Loka Mountains.
So where does that radius start in the
The radius starts right here in the middle.
The thickness of the local Loka Mountain, that line thickness, or is it thicker than that line? That's what he's getting.
I have to look it up and see how thick they are. Not the radius, the thickness of the mountain range.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, that's. I think that figure is given.
In another chart, the table mentioned the thickness of the
Loka Mountain. Does he? I don't remember.
So I thought it was going from that line to show there all the way up to the within close to the outer edge.
No, because that's labeled as what's that one say?
Aloka Varsha.
There's Aloka Varsha.
So between the Aloka Mountain and the radius of Brahmanda is just empty space.
Yeah, they have it thin there too. Yeah, you just walk in.
It's not super thick. But it's very high. And I don't know how that works. One-fourth the diameter of Brahmanda from Sumeru. Come on, I got this little thing floating around here. I can't get rid of it.
What's so important for you?
He's a consultant. Have you seen his the introductory video that he puts into this thing? Oh, I just closed it. I want to take it out and put it again anyway, because it's gone weird on me. This is the universal cure to everything in computer world. Turn it off and start it again. If that doesn't work, buy a new one.
In
where? No. I think people are pretty much ignoring it. Yeah, well, I don't have it. So you just have to... Dr. Howard Resnick. That's a Sanskrit consultant. Chris Beadle, you know Chris Beadle? Huh? What a name, Chris Beadle, huh? It's like right out of Dickens.
The way we view universe has a profound impact on our understanding of ourselves. Today we see the Earth as a small, fragile globe, orbiting at just the
right... Oh, God, come on.
Human life seems reduced to insignificant.
Can you hear us? I think it's up all the way.
At the end of the modern era, the universe appeared much more comfortable and accommodating. Thus, medieval European cosmology placed the Earth the center of a small spherical universe surrounded by the abode of God and the elect. In this study, we will explore an early Earth-centered conception of the cosmos from India. This cosmological system is presented in the Bhagavad Purana, or Srimad Bhagavatam, one of the
anyway, you can,
sacred texts.
Watch it over time, but I just thought we didn't knock it out. I did again. Anyway, time's up. He's got the one where he zooms in on Mount Meru and Kumru Fall goes down and stuff like that. But he left out the filament mountains. But we still have still more mysteries in the sacred universe. There's lots of them. Anyway, you get an idea of the project. We don't have class tomorrow. It's a vacation day. Return to the Dvaitacharya. When we come back, I'll find out again what the distance is between the edge of Bhumandala, meaning also including the Aloka Varsha and the edge of the universe, the gap. We're secure that it's not attached. Anything else? Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.